Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
What you want to do is communicate the value of the video. I would think of it as all this packaging, think of it as a dial where you're selecting what emotion you want the person to feel.
What is up, certified homies? Welcome to another episode of From A to B. You have Shiva, and I'm joined by Kingpin Finn McKenzie. Just a very quick 2-second backstory. Finn, I've been watching your videos on YouTube for probably close to 3 years or now, and I'm super excited to be able to talk to you about basically, you know, you've built a career amassing 700,000 YouTube subscribers. I think that's pretty fucking badass. Your content's fire. If you're not subbed to Finn, go sub to him. His content's really cool. I'm stoked to be able to talk to you because you have a very interesting POV in CRO regarding video. And that's where I really want to dive deep into this. What is the role of video in website optimization? So before I get into that, actually, fuck it. I'm just going to jump into it.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
First,
let me just really quickly give you my resume for anybody listening and they're wondering why should I listen to this YouTuber about this stuff. So besides YouTube, which I've been doing since 2017, and I have about 120 million views on there, my career has actually been in like product design and marketing for like the past 20 years. So I worked at an industrial design agency doing stuff for, you know, giant brands like Febreze and Swiffer and Tide and stuff like that. Worked as a designer for Abercrombie and Fitch, worked at a startup called Creative Live, which was online education for creative people. And now I'm partner in a company called URM Academy that does online education for music producers. And so the last 10 years, I've been like very focused basically on products where the core offering is people paying for access to video. So that's sort of, in addition to YouTube, that's sort of, I guess, my point of view on this. So to answer your question, what is the role of video in website optimization? The question you should ask yourself is like, what is your goal and how might video help me get there? But as one obvious example, typically one of the biggest challenges for any product is getting people to either use features that exist and either the people, you know, users don't know about these features or aren't using them the way that you would like them to, they aren't using them fully, or getting them to consume content that is, you know, it's basically the same thing. It's like getting people to use shit is typically the hardest thing. Building shit is hard. Getting people to use it is even harder, right? Totally. So I think video is obviously a great way to do that. One thing I really like is the idea of, rather than how a lot of people do things, is they'll give you, when you land on the product, you sign up for the first time during the onboarding flow, they'll give you a tour. Nobody likes these. You want to click through them as fast as possible because you're like, shut the fuck up. Let me use this thing I just paid for. Like, yeah. I got a thing to do. So, you know, there's no hard and fast rules. You know, we know we should always test things, blah, blah, blah. But generally speaking, I don't love tours, so I would suggest don't make a 5-minute long video giving people a walkthrough of the entire product. What I would suggest you do with video is use video in what I would call nudges, meaning that when someone is in a situation in which they're using a feature for the first time, that's the time to show them a very quick tutorial, which could even be an animated GIF. I would call that a type of video. So let's say, for example, like we have a contest on our app. People will submit their music mix, you know, for this contest. There's a lot of different sort of nuances to that contest about how you vote and where the prizes are and blah, blah, blah. The first time that they click on the vote section, that would be a great time to show them a 5-second animated GIF that says, hey, here's how you vote, here's how you submit, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that's just sort of one example. But I think I want to, what's the right way to put it? I think your question is bullshit, Shiva, because I'm joking.
I have a lot of those.
No, but in all seriousness, I mean, you should always ask what is the problem and how do we solve it rather than I've got a tool, how do I use it? You know what I mean?
I agree. Yeah. So I guess that was more of a way to just open the floodgates. Yeah. One thing I want to dig a little bit deeper into is metrics regarding success. One of the things I struggle with personally, I know you talked a little bit about a product. I do think that same terminology can apply to like prospecting and people coming to your site for the first time. Agreed. One of the things I've struggled with a lot is understanding success of video. There's a complex, probably matrix of metrics that you might look at, such as, did people even engage with the video? You said people don't want to go into a product and immediately watch 10 minutes of a video on how to use it. They just want to get to it. They just want to have fun. And you could easily back that up if you did that, for example. You could look at the data and be like, oh, look, 99% of people click skip. So that's a quick data point. On websites specifically, this is a problem I suffered with a lot, is people will say, the video is so cool. Everyone wants to watch a video. It costs us hundreds of thousands of dollars to make. You put it on the website. There's like 7 people click on it, and 7 of which were me testing to see if the tracking was working properly. Is it click tracking? Is it the time of engagement? Like, what would be your analysis for saying like, this video is good, or no, I don't think this video is going to be of high quality for users consuming
those are all good options. But what I would also look at is the correlation between the actual outcome you're trying to drive, because the outcome in most cases is not watching a video. That's not the actual goal. The actual goal is like adoption of a feature or, you know, retention or something like that. So, for example, for our app, we were looking at like our onboarding flow, and we looked at retention between people who watched at least 30 seconds of a video within their first session versus people who didn't watch a video in their first session. And the retention curve for the people who did watch a video in their first session was like 20% higher, which makes sense because our product fundamentally is you're paying for access to videos. So it makes sense that if people watch a video, they're going to be retained more. What is the actual business objective you're trying to achieve, and how does video engagement correlate with that? It's generally not going to be a clear-cut answer. You know, you're generally going to find a correlation, and there's sort of an open question of correlation versus causation, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, people watching a video on its own probably doesn't have any inherent value.
Yeah, agreed. It very much can correlate. Let's dig a little bit deeper into this. So obviously, your product is, we want people to consume our videos. They're paying to consume the videos. What are some tactics you're doing? And I don't want to say this is like we should just adopt this, but let's say we want to try and nudge people towards watching the video, because otherwise maybe they just see the video, they glance past it, they got banner blind or something else. What are some tactics you're doing to try and nudge people into consuming one, if not multiple videos?
I mean, discovery is pretty much always the toughest thing. So I'll describe our core product just so everyone understands what it is. So the way it works is when you join, every month we have a different musician on, a different band will come on, and you get the actual multi-track files from that album. And these are like big bands like Fall Out Boy and Nickelback and people like that. They're, you know,
so
like
cool.
Legit huge bands. So to have access to those multi-tracks is, before we did that, it was literally impossible to get them. That's pretty cool. You get that at the beginning of the month. And then at the end of the month, the producer who actually mixed the album will come on and do a live stream where they show how they did it. And those live streams are usually, you know, between 4 and 10 hours long, because this is like very technical stuff that takes a really long time to show and explain and all that stuff. So it is a big ask to get people to watch something that long, either live or as a video on demand or as a VOD. That's sort of one of the main things we look at, is like how many people watched this stream, how many comments do we have, stuff like that. So I'll share some of the tactics that we've used to drive adoption of that stuff. So number one is using external platforms to drive people to our site to watch this video. So we do emails. We have a very active Facebook group. So we have like, you know, something like 7,000 paying members now. And I want to say around 5,000 of them are in the Facebook group. And I think about 1,500 of them are active on a weekly basis, which I think is pretty great considering that it's Facebook. So we'll post there like, hey, we're going live tomorrow. We're going live in 5 minutes, you know, that sort of thing. That drives a decent amount of traffic. Same thing with emails. One specific thing with email that's interesting, and I picked this up at Creative Live, when you're driving someone to a live event, the timing of those emails matters a lot. Let's say we had a live stream that was happening on April 30th. At first, we were like, oh, well, we want to start promoting this thing as early as possible because we want as many people to come. And so we would start like 4 to 6 weeks out getting people to sign up for reminders, you know, for this thing. What we found after we hired a data scientist to help us look at this is that of the people who signed up, like say 2 or 3 weeks out, like 5% of them actually showed up. So it was basically just a complete waste of time to drive traffic that early. It arguably destroyed value because to me, every email that you send, when you send an email, you're making a withdrawal from the bank of goodwill in the way I see it. So I don't want to send any more emails than I have to. So we're sending all these emails, burning up goodwill, annoying people in their inbox, and they don't even show up to the live stream. And so what we found is that, and this is true for webinars too, which I've done a ton of, is that usually 48 hours before the live event tends to be kind of the magic number of early enough that they will come to this thing, but late enough that they'll actually show up. Because you think about signing up for a live stream 4 weeks from now, are you actually going to show up for that? Probably not. Another tactic that we have used is because these live streams are really long, 4, 6, 8 hours, sometimes there's a couple that are 10 or 12 hours, that's asking a lot of people, right, to sit down and watch something this long. And so we did two things to help them chunk it into smaller pieces that are a little bit more digestible. Number one, we made timestamps for all of them. And these are human-generated timestamps. AI is awesome, but I think...
It's not. It sucks. I know for my podcast, it'll auto-generate timestamps, and it's so bad.
It's better than nothing, but not much better. Especially with like highly technical stuff like this. Like if it was a conversation about something very general, maybe it would work. But when you're talking about music production, they call it audio engineering for a reason because it's extremely technical. CRO or something like that. I don't think AI, you know, it doesn't have the training data to parse that well. We have human-generated timestamps from our employees who know this shit really well and do a great job of it. That's number one. If whatever you're interested only in the guitar portion of it, you know, we have that all broken down. We also created highlight clips that are, say, 5 to 15 minutes long from the live stream to help people digest it. So basically the insight here, and this is all based on like user research, is like that people are like, hey, sometimes I only have an hour, you know, to work on this stuff because my kids go to bed and, you know, my wife's like, okay, you have an hour. What can I do? Well, you're not going to be able to watch a full live stream in that. So what can we give users that, you know, they can be productive, you know, in an hour?
I love this. To mirror that concept with like putting websites on videos and thinking about that timing, the timestamps set expectations ahead of time. If you just see a video with a thumbnail that's like no title, no nothing, there's a psychology behind it that, yeah, you might have less people click it overall, perhaps, but the quality of people who do it will be higher. I do this with podcasts, just anecdotally speaking. If I go through a podcast and I see no timestamps and a very shitty AI-generated description, I'd be like, I don't know if I necessarily want to check out the episode. Versus if it's like, we talked about these things, I might skip to that specific time point and really consume it. And I will continue to come back, and I appreciate that they set the expectations up front. That's interesting. That's another data point, right? Do you use the timestamps within these videos to like continue on content? Because I know YouTube, you'll see like in the video, they'll have like the popularity of the content, and like most people view this chunk of content a lot more than others. Do you use that mechanism to feed into your video strategy?
I would love to. We don't have that capability just because, you know, it's just a question of resources. But if I had... whatever 5,000 engineers like Google does, then I would love to have that.
Yeah, that's a common thing in the CRO community of you're a one-person team doing everything. Yep. You also mentioned a little bit about like the timing of emails, and I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't want to say necessarily explicitly time, but when we think about journeys of users going through the site, perhaps there's an assumption that video will always be relevant to every user at all time, kind of a spray and pray. I guess that's the case. There are times where certain types of video make sense for certain types of users. For example, if you're close to the purchase decision and you want to look at like all the support videos, like perhaps there's integration videos for B2B, right. Or like, hey, if I don't know, I'm thinking of like a tech fidget that I want to buy. Will this integrate? What happens if it breaks? What if I buy this other tool? Are there videos or other consumable content? So many times I see people just gate that content, or they'll just shittily plop it on YouTube with like 7 views. What are your thoughts on that?
Use video if you need to use video. Otherwise, don't. Like, it seems very obvious to me, but it's getting back to that conversation. Like, weirdly, for somebody who has made so much of my career with video, I'm kind of anti-video. Because, I mean, for a few reasons. Number one, it's a very heavy lift to produce. Like, to produce anything with video takes probably 10 times more resources than text, if not more. Second, from a user experience standpoint, when I see a video, I groan. I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to watch a fucking video. Just fucking tell me the thing. Especially some like agonizingly paced corporate video with like a 10-second long intro and animation. Like the Canvas videos are brutal. It takes like 45 seconds to get to the actual content. And I know that I probably sound like a Zoomer or something like that, but like, I mean, 45 seconds feels like an eternity when you're watching a video, especially if you're busy. You're like, just show me how to use the fucking thing. And did this need to be a video? Probably not. With that being said, the cases where I think video is very useful is like for us, our content does need to be video because we're showing people doing things that relate to audio. And so it has to have this combination of audio and video, in which case, it needs to be a video. Or audio and image, whatever, you understand what I'm saying. So you're talking about like showing integrations, like how to set up an integration. I think that is sort of a case by case, you know, scenario of like, it might be better to just do it as a blog post with screenshots and text, because that's probably easier to parse as a user, as opposed to having to like scrub through, oh, where was the part where he showed me how to do this video? Like, ah, fuck, you know, this menu, and you just want to throw your phone down, or like, it would have been better as text. So, or text and image. So go back to like, what is the problem you're trying to solve? And is video the best tool for that? If so, cool. But you know, the idea that like, as you mentioned, I think there's a lot of people that sort of have this unstated assumption that somehow video is like inherently better than, you know, text or images, I think is totally false for lots of reasons.
So let's just say you are the CRO and there's a video. There's a component of a video that leadership's just pressuring you. We have to get video, and you're the lowly CRO doing their best. And you're like, all right, well, we know that there's two people clicking on this video, but they want to get video on the site. They think video is the thing. So you're kind of in a rock and a hard place. You have to do your best to try and optimize for video.
I'll tell you my answer to this.
I didn't even ask the question and you already know the answer.
Do whatever the stakeholders want.
Yeah.
That's my answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's depressing and probably accurate.
Do whatever the stakeholders want, get your paycheck and move on.
Figure out other ways to optimize, I guess.
Yeah. Ask a question. I'll give you my less cynical answer.
So in this case, right, where they're saying we want video on the site, let's just say it's the homepage, they want interactivity, they want video. We talked a little bit about this in the timestamping, right? It's setting these expectations. It's trying to hook people in to try and get them to click. Yep. And this is something I do a lot. I'm trying it. I'm trying to have fun with it. I don't know if it works or not, but I'm trying it, which is like clickbait thumbnails, the type of like Mr. Beast style thumbnails, which look at any of your videos, you do the same thing. Right. And I love it. It's great. But it does hook people in. It does work. I guess one, is there anything to it? Have you actually A/B tested thumbnails like that?
Like on YouTube in particular, or on our product,
or any of that. And I'll say, just like, to be clear, when I say A/B tested, I don't mean literally run an A/B test with thumbnails, but more just like validated that that's something we're going through.
So there's a couple things to keep in mind. Like, I'll refer to all of this as the packaging around your video, which on YouTube is the title and the thumbnail, which works together to sort of communicate what the value is of the video is about. On a website, it could be the text surrounding it, the title of the page. You know, it could be the subject line of the email that you're using. Like, so let's just talk in general about the packaging around the video, which is going to, you know, the specifics are going to vary depending on the context. What you want to do is communicate the value of the video. I would think of it as all this packaging. Think of it as a dial where you're selecting what emotion you want the person to feel. That could be like desire, meaning desire to achieve a thing. Learn how to do this in 5 minutes, right? Like this thing that is an annoying pain in the ass for you right now. In 5 minutes, I'll show you how to make this pain in the ass go away. That's sort of an obvious one. Fear is another, you know, emotion that people use a lot with video. Is like, hey, if you don't use this, you're fucking up. Probably in the case of business, maybe this is less common, but things like amusement or, you know, right? I mean, like,
it should be more because people, so many people in B2BF sticks up their asses that they have to talk about the future is here and all
Can
this bullshit.
Please like, tell me why having fun or creating fun content would ever negatively affect your business.
Have you seen Chili Piper?
No, what's that?
It's a company. To be honest, I don't know exactly what they do, but I know they have a lot of, they're a B2B company and their personality. And they, like, first of all, they encourage all the employees to just have fun on LinkedIn and do this type of stuff. But the personality oozes from the company. They did an April Fool's joke where they're like, we're having a mandatory return to office. And you showed, like, they showed photos of the offices and it looks like Office Space, like the worst offices in the world. And it went super viral. So, like, totally, like, have some fun, have some personality. Just,
is there anyone that's gonna be like, man, I was thinking about signing up for that CRM, but it seems like they're having a little bit too much fun over there. I don't know about this. Those guys seem a little bit too likable. I think I'm gonna go with the competitor because they're boring. It's never happened ever.
I really wish, you know, that's how I want to dig into this. I want to try and find examples of B2B companies having fun and showcasing their personality. Because I think that's a challenge with B2B. I think even certain e-com clients.
I've given up on it. It's a lost cause. I just gave up. I'm focusing on
so cynical,
no, Finn. I'm focusing on solopreneurs because it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there's some diamonds in the rough out there of B2B companies that have the right culture for this. But I'm not interested in trying to help people that don't want to be helped. You know, if you want to make fucking email gated white papers, then great, do it. If that's working for you, awesome. You don't need me. And if what you're doing isn't working and you're not receptive to hearing me tell you what is going to work, well, then fine. Keep doing what you're doing. Like, I don't want to help people that don't want to be helped. Solopreneurs get it. They understand the importance of having personality, building a brand around what you believe and why. You know, they get it. And there aren't 900 layers of chicken shit middle managers that are going to ruin everything. And so that's why I'm focusing on solopreneurs. If there's any B2B companies listening to this and want to work with me, awesome. I would love to. I mean, I've worked at, you know, whatever, fucking giant publicly traded companies and startups and agencies. I've worked at all of them. I get it. So if you want to work with me, I would love to. But I actually understand it because, you know, I think culture is, let's put it this way. Is there any reason why, say, a B2B SaaS company, is there any reason why their culture would be conducive to making entertaining, fun content? No. Just the same as, like, you know, when you see YouTubers try to start software companies and stuff, which does happen occasionally, they usually fucking suck at it because, you know, aside from a few rare people like me, how many YouTubers have any experience building software products? Why would they be good at it, right? They wouldn't be.
Well, I guess that's where you surround yourself with good folks to try and push a product if you have a vision like that. But
even then, it's like, what is a YouTuber other than having an idea? What are they really going to bring to the table? Aside from, there's a few rare birds, you know, that are capable of being leaders and stuff. But
to be fair, that happens a lot in product generation
totally
too sometimes.
Does.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Totally. And
it's not unique to YouTubers. No,
it's not. And it's almost always a disaster.
Yeah.
So my point is, like, I mean, I would love it if B2B, you know, has this grand awakening and they start making content. But like, people have been saying this for years. Why does B2B marketing suck? Why don't we stop? And it's not changing. And it's like, well, then I guess that's just how B2B is. I've dealt with like addicts and stuff my whole life and my family, and I know tons of them, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, with them, it's sort of like you just have to step back and be like, listen, when you're ready to change, we're here for you. Until then, you're on your own.
Yeah. I think that has a lot of parallels in CRO space, where sometimes people just won't adopt this testing mindset, this validation mindset. It's frustrating as hell. I love what you're doing with the solopreneur thing, because that's kind of what I'm trying to do with this podcast too, is just talk to the people at the ground roots, trying to affect the change, trying to do those things and give them the advice and thoughts and have these different perspectives and POVs.
Just do what the stakeholders want. That's my advice.
Sage advice from Finn McKenty. Just do what the people who pays your paycheck
Tell them
does.
What they want to hear and do what they want, even if it's a bad idea. Yeah. Yes, the idea you had was a smashing success.
All right. I know we kind of went totally sideways on this. I do want to explore this one last point before we jump into shit you need to know. The idea of the wrapper of the video. I think that's a really powerful way to think about it, right? It's not just the thumbnail. It's not just the thumbnail that Mr. Beast hooks you in, or the Finn McKenty thumbnail that hooks you in. It's the title. It's the content. It's what's surrounding all of that, the description. So when we take that principle of the wrapper of the video and try and adopt that to, like, let's say prospecting on websites, right? You land on a homepage and you have just a video.
Yep.
Like, that same wrapper exists where it's that left rail content. It's the story you're telling.
It's the headline on the search result or the ad. You know, conversion starts from the very first.
Yeah, even a step before the
conversion
page.
Starts at the first impression.
Totally. Any final thoughts on like the wrapper of the video, that maybe just some tips to think about? Because I do love this idea of like, think about the wrapper. Don't just think about the video.
Yep.
It's everything around it.
Think about, you know, that emotional dial is number one. Number two is, like, think of the idea of, you know, they call it STV or seconds to value in like the intro to a video, but that's everywhere. That's everywhere. Is like, give me the value immediately. Like, YouTube is such a ruthless meritocracy that like every YouTuber has had this, because it's essentially everything on YouTube is CRO at scale. It's because every moment of every video, and it just, you have no choice but to do what the audience wants as expressed by their actions, which you see because YouTube Studio has amazing analytics and stuff. And so you will get pounded into submission of delivering value to your audience as quickly and frequently as possible, because if you don't, you die. And I think that's great.
You have to be ruthlessly data-driven on YouTube.
Yes, you do. And it is humbling. You know, this thing that you thought was really important and amazing, the audience is like, shut the fuck up and show us the thing. You're like, damn, I spent 6 hours on that.
And that one thing you spent like 30 seconds on, just a random meme goes absolutely viral.
Yep. It is what it is. And that, you know, going back to CRO, it's sort of this weird paradox of like, you know, because there's so many times that experiments either end up being inconclusive or confirm, you know, or the result is totally counterintuitive. And you're like, am I just a monkey? Like, throwing random variables into this and just collecting the results. Like, what do I know? Do I know anything about anything?
Yeah, it can be very humbling that the thing you have the most confidence in, you run the test and you're like, oh, I'm an idiot.
It's humbling. And YouTube is the same thing. You know, so many videos where you're sure this one's going to be a hit and it's not. And like you said, the other one that you just barfed out in 2 seconds is the hit. And it's like, well, it is what it is, you know?
One last question for you. I really need to get into the YouTube game. I'm probably going to take your sage advice and start doing it, but I need to just have the time to video edit. It's my own fault. Anyway, does YouTube actually enable you to do CRO A/B testing? Like, can you actually test thumbnails? Can you swap out video? Like, can you test out anything there?
As of now, no. There's a feature that's in beta for split testing thumbnails, and it allow you, I think you can do three, I'm not sure. I don't have that feature enabled on any of my accounts, so I'm not sure. But no, there's not split testing in the way that you would expect. I don't know, like we used to use Optimizely. I don't know what sort of the current tool. Yeah, but it doesn't, it's not like that. I wish it was, but it's not. And I can understand. I mean, technically, when you're talking about the scale they're operating on, it's not, you know, when you're rolling something out like that affects 2.7 billion, you know, mouths, that's no joke. So I get it.
I get it. On the flip side, man. So like, you think about marketplaces and YouTube, like eBay. If I could A-B test me selling shit on Amazon, I think Amazon's starting to roll out some A-B testing capabilities for sellers. Man, that would be so powerful. But the flip side is people don't understand the testing, so they really have to guardrail and walk people through.
Otherwise, everyone's going to be split testing 12 different images, 12 different titles, 12 different descriptions.
Call it after 1 hour and then move on.
Right.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's a pretty good wrap for that first section. Kingpin Finn McKinty, what is it time for?
It is time for Shit You Should Know.
There we go. Shit You Need to Know comes courtesy of Saeed K. He talks about a very interesting dichotomy between evidence and data. How do you phrase them differently? So I'll just quote from him for what the words that are coming out of my mouth right now are, which is, I now use the word evidence instead of data when asking product managers about their decisions. What evidence do you come to that decision?
That's a very hostile question, but okay.
But I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. That is kind of hostile. What is your evidence?
Yeah, as a PM, I'd be like, all right, fuck you too. Why don't you just tell me you don't want to do this?
I didn't think about that. So his ultimate point is when we say data, it implies just numbers.
Yeah. So the difference, so there's a book called Turning Numbers into Knowledge with this exact question, because there is a difference between data, which is, we hope, objective fact, and knowledge, which is conclusions based on that data.
Based on that data, yeah.
By the way, I would rather somebody, rather than ask me that question, I would rather just someone say, hey man, I don't think this is a good idea, here's why. And we can talk about that. Like, you don't have to like dress it up for me, you know? And I think most, we've talked about this before, but I think, you know, a lot of us who do this kind of work, I think are a little on the spectrum. And for us, like, you don't need to be gentle with me, just say it, it's fine, you know?
With us, however, there are
normies,
PMs.
Yes.
Yes. The other people, you might actually have to be sensitive. Yes. So if you come to, you're right. If you say, what evidence did you come to? What evidence did you have to come to that decision would be hostile. Yeah. It's interesting that data feels less disarming, but the ultimate point of, it's an interesting thought. Like, do you talk to people about what's the evidence? Because like the evidence might be you talked to someone. Yeah.
I'll tell you how I address this when if that's sort of the question here, is I will say, here's what I recommend we do. Here's why I recommend that we do it. And then I will discuss a few alternatives and explain why they might be true. Mm-hmm. So I'll say, I think we should do, you know, roll out this feature first because here's what's going on with the business. Here's what users told me. So I think this is a priority. However, I might be wrong. Here's a couple other potential rationales, and I'll tell you why I don't agree with those, but let's talk about it because, you know, it wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong. I find that that really helps a lot because then people feel, what people don't like is, rightfully so, feeling like they're being railroaded and they're potentially agreeing to something without, when they're in the dark and they're not aware of what the other alternative, they're like, I mean, I guess this is okay, but I feel a little bit weird about this because I feel like I'm being just led down this path. So I want to say, here's all the options. This is the one I like and why, but let's talk about it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's, don't necessarily force them to drink the water, but give them the option, show them the available options.
Yeah, and sometimes they'll be like, and I like to list all my assumptions. Like, here's why I think this is true. And and sometimes they'll be, you know, sometimes they'll change my mind, you know, like, well, actually, I know that you said this is what's going on with the business, but really we could borrow some money to do this instead. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's true, then that's no longer a priority. Then let's do this other thing instead.
I think that makes a ton of sense. I do think the mindset shift of evidence versus simply presenting numbers makes sense. As much as you should do both, to be honest. The evidence includes the presentation of the numbers, but it's extrapolation beyond that.
I think we talked about this, but like one of the things that I think, you know, data-driven people, quote unquote, do a lot, which is really bad, is there's a guy named Avinash Kaushik who has this term of customized data pukes. Like, this is terrible communication. Like, dashboards that are just full of shit or...
Yeah,
you know, PowerPoints with graph, like this is not persuasive. That's not evidence. That's just, that's a customized data puke, and it's not persuasive to anybody. It's just, it's annoying, if anything,
Bringing this back to CRO, that's the test to learn, not show numbers and say it won or not. You're talking about the insights. You're talking about what we learned in this test. Even if you have 10 tests that lose, if you talk about all the insights, rather than simply just saying minus 10, minus 20, minus whatever, and you show a thoughtful strategy, it sells so much more to people, and people will be so much more interested when you talk about evidence. And even if the evidence is it didn't learn, like we learned something that this doesn't work and this is what we're doing as a result of it, that's what elevates you into just people liking you, trusting you, rather than, well, what is your evidence that made you come to that decision? You know,
the other thing is, like, consider that when you're giving people a lot of data on its own, like you're actually adding to their cognitive load, because you're asking them to parse this shit and they already have a very full plate. So you're probably spiking their cortisol when they're like, oh my God, you just showed me a bunch of shit and I have to figure out what the fuck this means. Like, I want to throw you out the window. Why don't you tell me what it means, motherfucker?
It's your job.
You tell me.
And then if they make shitty decisions off of that, then that's their fault.
You deal with it.
All right. Well, that wraps up for another episode of From A to B. Thank you, Kingpin Finn McKenty, for joining. Where can the folks find you?
FinnMcKenty.com is the best place to find me right now. The thing I'm focusing on more than anything else is helping people grow their business with YouTube. Like I said, my focus right now is on solopreneurs, but if there's anybody, you know, that's running a company that wants to talk, I'd be happy to. That's the best place to find me.
Finn McKenty absolutely has a track record of success, so definitely reach out
and
to
failure.
Him for... Well, yeah, and you learned from the failure.
That's right. That's how I like to spin it.
Cool. Cool. All right. Thanks for joining, Finty. Finn.
What's it like? Do you know the movie I Love You, Man? Where he's like, it's like, I'll see you later, Jobin. And he's like, oh, why did I say that?
It's just my brain is just not working. It's just at functionally off. So I just try it. You're right. I think we're all on the spectrum. My brain just works at like, how can we optimize? Finty, that's your name. Just move on.
Yep.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.